Live from the Canon Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne.
You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer. This monthly program is a chance for Delawareans to hear directly from their governor and ask questions in real time. Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, thanks for joining us in studio.
Thanks, Shirley. Great to be here.
So, Governor, we're going to get through a lot in the next hour, and we would love to include our audience in those conversations. Include their questions and comments in the mix by calling 888-477-9499. Or emailing askgovmeyer@whyy.org. Or if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comment in the chat. And Governor, we're going to start with the long-awaited Port of Wilmington expansion. Federal permitting issues that were holding that project up have been resolved, which means work on the new container port is expected to begin this summer. But the delay has resulted in the price tag going up, leaving about $185 million gap. But we'll just start with how or where is that money going to come from? How are you going to fill that gap?
Look, first of all, this is a really important project to the state, to the region. I would argue to our nation. Right now, what I hear when I travel across our state and, in fact, across the country is people are getting squeezed. There's a lot of fear out there of new technologies taking away jobs. Job prospects now for college and high school graduates are harder than they've been, more challenging than they've been in a long time. I bet you just about every listener here knows someone who's mid-career, who's graduating school, who's facing really, really challenging job application process, 50, 100 applications going unanswered. This is an opportunity. This port is an opportunity to take a port that's been a leading port for generations, a critical provider of over 1,000 blue-collar quality union jobs and dramatically expand it. Dramatically expand it first through several years of construction, good union construction jobs, and followed up with good union ILA, longshoremen, and other union trades working at our port, being involved on the front lines of global commerce for years to come. As you stated, because of delays in the project that happened before I came in as governor, this container port, they've been talking about it for over 15 years. And the price estimate that they got, I think in 2017, 2018, has now increased by over $100 million. I've committed in the past to getting this done. We are still committed to getting it done. I assure Delaware taxpayers, we are not going to foot every penny of the bill, of the additional bill, or the entire bill. And as we look at trying to find the resources to bridge the gap so we can build this vitally important infrastructure project for our region, we're going to make sure Delaware taxpayers are treated right.
Will that involve the port operator infrastructure being part of the financing piece of the puzzle?
Yes.
And that's a situation you expect to be, like, I guess, negotiating over the course of time. Do you have a timetable for trying to lock down that funding?
Soon. Months, if not weeks.
Okay.
Well, the project's been in the works for years. It's faced multiple delays. Why should Delawareans believe that it's actually going to happen this time?
Yeah, that's a fair question. I asked that myself. When I was a 6th and 7th grade math teacher, not too far from the existing Wilmington port, a lot of the families that I served, a lot of the children I taught had parents, aunts, uncles, cousins working at the port, and they were talking about it excitedly back then. That was over 10 years ago. And now, you know, when I ran, I said, is this thing real? Because they've been talking about it for over 5 years. It is going to happen. On my watch, it will happen. One reason it's going to happen is we put the right people in the right places. We didn't just keep all the same old people in the same seats. We put new blood in, people with experience getting port deals done. Mm-hmm. And we've moved forward in my first 15 months in office faster than I think any governor can say. So we're confident it's going to get done. We're not out of the woods yet. There's a large, you know, $600 million plus project is challenging to see to completion. But I assure the people of Delaware, we will get this done.
Okay, so the new port is expected to have this major economic impact. Tom, you want to pick it up?
Yeah,
there?
So jobs are a big piece of the puzzle, as you mentioned, Governor. And we keep hearing the expansion will create about 3,000 direct jobs. During the Port Expansion Task Force meeting this week, the chair, State Senator Darius Brown, asked about plans to make sure Delawareans who want those jobs are ready to get them.
I just want us to be proactive in a way of, you know, with the current work that's at the port, with the expectation with the expansion of the port to Edgemoor, I'd rather have these things already built in place instead of trying to build them as we're going into operation.
So as your administration started thinking about this piece of the puzzle.
The training piece.
Yeah, and largely making sure that there's a ready-made workforce here.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And Senator Brown makes a fair and very good point. There's a workforce challenge with regard to the construction. We don't want people coming from all over the country to come and build our port. We want Delawareans as much as possible to build our port. But that's only possible if we've appropriately trained people in the trades. We have a pathways program that it's just celebrating, I think, 12 years in existence. Our high school pathways, that Delaware has the number one high school pathways program in the country. 75% of public school high school students in Delaware are in a pathway. I think it's over 30,000 students that go through our pathways program. The second place is in the 40-something percent of any state in the country. We need to make sure that at the high school level, we're giving young people opportunities to get into trades, whether the port or elsewhere. You go take on welding or carpentry. I don't know if anyone listening has tried to renovate a kitchen or anything in their house recently. There's a huge shortage of people who are willing to get their hands dirty and do hard work. There's going to be tremendous opportunity. And we got to make sure both in high schools and in skills centers that we have the facilities and we're doing everything we can to attract the people to train for these job opportunities that we know are coming.
Well, are there any guarantees that Delaware residents will benefit from these jobs, specifically these construction jobs?
Yeah, I don't think contractually there's any guarantee. Listen, the bottom line is Delawareans have to compete. Mm-hmm. We need to, if you're going to be a carpenter, if you're going to be a welder, if you're going to be a boilermaker or a mill worker, you got to study and you got to work hard and you got to go through an apprenticeship program, and you got to make sure that you are the best in your trade. It will not only benefit you in getting jobs at the port in Delaware, but it will benefit you to get jobs in the region as well.
Governor, I do want to ask, because the major economic impact we're expecting is something that hasn't necessarily been updated in some time. The state auditor releasing a report last year when they audited the Diamond State Port Corporation. And one of the things that Lydia York, the state auditor, recommended mm-hmm. was a new updated economic impact study of the Edgemoor Port expansion. Have you considered delivering a new version of that report so people know what the real-time expectations
are? The Diamond State Port Corporation is not something directly under my control. Mm-hmm. I appoint members to the board. Our Secretary of State, who I appointed to her position, serves as the chair of the port. And I know they're looking at updating the economic impact statement. I know people like to see economic impact, but you got to understand these are all forecasts. Right. If you did an economic impact statement in 2019,
right,
about 2020 or 2020, you would have been completely wrong because COVID came. If you would have done an economic impact statement a year ago about what happens in America in 2026, you probably didn't know we were going to war with Iran. You probably didn't know gas prices were going to spike. You'd be completely wrong. So I think it's important that we have some idea of what the economic impact in our region is, because that gives us a sense of what appetite we have mm-hmm. for investment. But we have to be realistic that these forecasts are not 100%
sure. But
accurate.
People hear that 3,000 jobs and
right.
things like that.
And they want to
know that it's, then they want to know that's a real thing.
Sure. That's fair. Suffice it to say that we have a major port now, our existing mm-hmm. port, that is about two generations, 30, 40 years out of date. And we're going to have the latest, greatest technology there, and businesses will come as a leading mid-Atlantic port in the United States.
Even though we have nearby port terminals in Philly and Jersey, you think that technology is going to give Delaware that edge?
If you take a boat from Europe or Africa, or the Middle East, or Asia, or Australia, and you want to come to the port of Philadelphia or the port of New Jersey, you'll get to the port of Delaware a day sooner, a day in, a day out. I don't know. If anyone knows a real estate agent, they always say location, location, location.
Well, before we move on, I have to bring in a listener comment. Jack from Wilmington wants to know what assurances you can offer for residents nearby this port expansion. He's concerned about the prospect of, quote, hundreds of idling diesel trucks 24/7 at the port waiting to be loaded. What can you say to
Jack? Yeah, no, it's a great question. One of my appointees to the port board, and I don't think this has been done before, was David Burt, who I know David Byrd. He's an attorney. I know him from his time working on land use boards for over a decade in Newcastle County. So we put people within the port management board to make sure they're looking out for local residents and looking out for the environmental sustainability. When you make a $600+ million investment on a river that's critical environmentally, water, in terms of the water quality, the land quality, the air quality, we need to make sure we're preserving our environment for generations to come. And I've made a pledge to residents. I can't promise them that every single element they want of that port they'll be able to control, but we're going to work hard to make sure both their investment in their neighborhood is protected and they'll retain a high quality of life. And we think ultimately it's going to be really good for the surrounding neighborhoods in terms of demand to come and live near the port.
So let's move on to jobs. First State's unemployment rate has been on the rise over the past 12 months. Latest numbers put it at 5.4%. That's a percent higher than the previous year and higher than the current national rate. Certainly 3,000 new port jobs could help that situation. But are there other things your administration is trying to do to drive unemployment down?
Absolutely. What we're trying to do is in each of our core sectors have a number of major projects and also incentivize innovators to create. So if you look at the biotech sector, right? You have Merck, which last year announced a $1 billion investment. There was recently a $2 billion purchase of a Delaware startup. I think it's Synovate. There are four or five other multi-million dollar deals in biotech, while at the same time, we're making sure the Delaware Innovation Space, which is a collaborative effort of the DuPont Company, University of Delaware, and the state of Delaware, is providing appropriate incentives so that any innovator in chemistry or in biotech in the region is saying, when I start my company, I want it to be in Delaware. We have not been shy about sprinting forward to start the first medical school in Delaware. Now, the primary reason we're interested in starting medical school is to satisfy a shortage of physicians and other medical nurses and PAs, other medical practitioners in our state that's providing long wait times and high cost. But it's also going to be a tremendous job generator for our region, an education institution like that. So similarly, we recently announced about a month ago with Senator Mansavinos an overhaul of our banking regulation mm-hmm. in our state, something that has not been done until the early 80s. When it was done in the early 80s by Governor DuPont, what resulted was tens of thousands of banking jobs. We think there's a similar opportunity here if we look forward and say, hey, what is financial technology today? How do we build a regulatory system for that world?
Well, on top of struggling to find work, a lot of Delawareans are saying that the unemployment filing system can be an obstacle. So in a subreddit about unemployment in Delaware, people wrote how it took anywhere from 2 to sometimes 4 months to get a check. And then when people call, they get lost in all of the automated phone menus. They rarely get to speak to someone. What is the standard turnaround time for processing these checks? Or is this just how government works?
Yeah, it is not how government should work. Let me be absolutely clear. Unemployment insurance in states across the country broke during COVID. The antiquated system, sometimes little to no technology or very often old technology, was not prepared for the tens of thousands or in some state millions of claims that suddenly came in. Delaware was among those states where it really broke. When I came in over a year ago, we were still trying to recover that with some cases that were over 6 months old hadn't been responded to. What we spent our first year doing was clearing the backlog. So the long 3 month, 6 month backlog have gone away. Since January, because they were focused on clearing the backlog, there's a new smaller backlog. I was in a meeting last week where we're putting in place new technology, and we think in a matter of weeks, people are going to see a transformation in how that office operates.
We have about a minute to go, but I want to bring in a caller. Betty from Milton is on the line. Betty, what's your question for Governor Meyer?
Yes, I just want to say, first of all, I'm very proud of the way you've led Delaware in fighting back against the current administration and some of the things that they've done. My concern is about how misinformation, but in this case, altered history, is happening under this federal administration. And I'm concerned and wondering what you think Delaware can do about that, in addition to the many things that you have done to confront the things that they're doing. I'm thinking about the national park signage, government websites that have been scrubbed of information, and I expect in the future textbooks will be altered.
Yeah, thank you, Betty. It is a very, very serious concern, and I appreciate the question. Look, for me, the bottom line is that in D.C., our federal government is not looking out for you, Betty, or for any of us. And in Delaware, we're determined to lead in a way that we are looking out for you. Part of that is telling honest and hard truths about our own history. We recently, Betty, as you probably know, launched the 250th anniversary celebration in Delaware. I know many during this time elsewhere in the country are trying to sugarcoat our history. Many of the individuals who were involved in starting our country held enslaved people, mm-hmm. and they did until they died, and some of them for subsequent generations as well. If we truly want to be excellent as a country, if we ever want to create this perfect union, I think we need to be very honest about our history. We're doing so in Delaware. We're doing so through our schools. We're doing so through our libraries, and we will not compromise on that
point. All right. Thank you so much. And thank you, Betty, for calling. We're going to stop there for a moment, but we'll be right back with more from Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. We're going to dive into concerns about businesses leaving Delaware, the rollout of legalized marijuana in Delaware, and what to do about so-called, quote, gas station drug causing concern amongst lawmakers. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne. With us live in our Philadelphia studio is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer.
He's taking questions from us and from you this hour. If you have a question or comment, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org or call in at 888-477-9499. We're going to start this hour with an issue that many have dubbed Dexit. In the last couple of months, several companies, including a pawn shop chain with a $9 billion market cap, filed to unincorporate from Delaware, and they're part of a larger trend. So, Governor, what do you say about lingering concerns about Delaware's reputation in the business world slipping?
I look at the data, and our data is great. The fact is that the Delaware corporate franchise, in terms of numbers of businesses, in terms of revenue coming into the state to help us pay for our schools, for our transportation, for our health systems, is stronger than it has ever been. There are over 2.2 million entities from across the globe that are incorporated in Delaware. Now, when you have 2.2 million entities, there are going to be some that leave because people get court decisions that they aren't happy with, and some people that own court decisions have a lot of power in the media. They're able to highlight, oh my God, this big company left. It's a little bit like me saying, oh, you chose to go to Acme instead of ShopRite, and I put it all over the news that if Shirley Min is not going to ShopRite anymore, ShopRite must be collapsing as a company. When in fact, when you look at the data, we're doing stronger and better than ever. It's going to come out that we have a DFAC meeting coming out where we will. Our numbers, I don't think, have been quite finalized. Once they're finalized, we will announce them to the public and people will see. So does it concern me when any company leaves? Of course. We know that this is the premier place for any company in the world to incorporate. I'm not just saying that. Corporations are showing it. Two-thirds of Fortune 500 companies are incorporated in our state. In December, we made an announcement about our corporate franchise numbers that they were way up as of mid-December. That trend is continuing. So we hope whoever left comes back, but if not, we're doing great in Delaware.
Connected to this a little bit, Governor, in your proposed budget, you are seeking additional revenue by increasing some business formation fees, annual taxes, mainly affecting LLCs, LLPs, alternative entities. House lawmakers last week passed a bill to do that, sending it on to the state Senate. But some GOP lawmakers during that debate argued that this is not the time to be raising those fees and taxes, worrying that these lingering Dexit concerns. Here's Republican State Representative Jeff Spiegelman.
We've seen the Dexit continue at the corporate franchise. This is a totally different thing. But if we think that Nevada and our other competitors are not going to link these two, fairly or unfairly, well, they are. They're going to do that. They don't need to grab all of our corporate franchise business. They don't need to grab all of our LLC business. They just need to grab a big chunk of it. And a big chunk of it would be really, really bad for Delaware.
How do you respond to Representative Spiegelman?
Look, it's the job of Republican leaders in the House, like Representative Spiegelman, to poke a hole in anything that I or Democratic leadership comes up with. The reality is the last time our LLC fees were raised, they were raised to $300. $300 in current terms, if you take into account inflation, is $417. So in fact, what Jeff Spiegelman, and I'm sure he knows the math to say this, should be saying is, this is amazing. We're giving Delaware LLCs a discount that they probably don't give in those other states he referenced. There also, when people conflate this with the corporate franchise, it's really not related.
But you don't see like a concern. The concern that he's clearly getting at is there's some kind of narrative developing that's lingering, that this kind of is like drip, 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 drip. That's not a concern for you?
When they raised the last, I think it was 12, 13 years ago, they raised the LLC fee from $200 to $300. How many LLCs left Delaware as a result of that increase? We don't have specific numbers on it, but the numbers the following year went way up. If there was any decrease, it was negligible. Why is that? I think most LLCs doing business, if you can't handle a $100 increase every 10, 15, 20 years, you probably have a bigger problem than simply where you're incorporated in.
I want to bring in a comment. It's an email from Nick, and he writes, I want Governor Meyer to explain his relationship with labor unions. The business managers are nominally Democratic, but the rank-and-file trades membership is overwhelmingly white, male, and MAGA. Why does he continue to push trade union priorities when the rank-and-file does not share progressive values of the people who got
elected? That's a great question, Nick. I really appreciate that. I think it's important we push Delaware priorities. I've been very open that we need to get work to the you know, any state work to the highest quality provider of that work at the lowest cost. Now, it's also really important that whoever we hire with state dollar treats their workers right. I think they're generally throughout history, and I am maybe the first governor, certainly the first governor in a long time who served in a union. I was in a teachers union. A union provides protection. There is a national effort to break sort of worker rights. And some people point to it, I think justifiably, when they look at our disappearing middle class, that workers are not being treated right. So I appreciate Nick's comment. I'm not blindly supportive of whatever any trade union brings me. When I say union jobs, it's really important that people get paid right. Mm-hmm. They get health care, quality health care and benefits for their work, and get compensated properly when they go to work.
Okay, we're going to turn now to an update on Delaware's legal marijuana landscape.
Oh, this will be fun.
Are you satisfied with how recreational sales have rolled out since beginning
last
August?
No, it's been really challenging. First of all, I'm proud. Recreational marijuana was talked about for years. I came into office, and within months, with the leaders, we brought in Josh Sanderlin from the private sector. Previously, our state government really looked at the legalization of marijuana as a public safety matter. Mm-hmm. I thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to create high quality jobs and an industry. It's been challenging for a few reasons. One is that it's hard to develop an industry when the federal government has all these restrictions. Now, we got some relief a little over a week ago, and I believe it was through an executive order of the president. Some of the banking regulations on marijuana businesses are being loosening. The reclassification of marijuana also helps. But it's challenging. It's a much more competitive environment for legalized marijuana, recreational marijuana, than it was when we started this conversation 6-7 years ago. A number of neighboring states, not including Pennsylvania, but a number of neighboring states like New Jersey, do offer legalized recreational marijuana. We have our head down. We're working to make sure that we open up opportunities. There are stores open across our state, and we're working to make sure several more are open. Particularly, there's a provision of law that addresses social equity. There's a realization in Delaware that the prosecution of marijuana cases over the years was not equitable across race and class. And there's an attempt to address that. And I'm committed to making sure we see that through.
Well, that brings us right to the next question. I mean, the social equity program under the new recreational marijuana program, it was designed to help people, as mm-hmm. you said, who are negatively impacted by past marijuana laws. But recent reporting from my colleague Sarah Mueller highlighted that some applicants lost licenses mm-hmm. after signing what the state calls predatory contracts with outside actors who were trying to take advantage of them. Mm-hmm. So what's going on here?
Yeah, there was a predatory, you know, one company went and was not really interested in social equity. It was interested in what we think is mistreating the social equity investors. And we pulled their licenses. We said, this is not what the program is about. We're going to get it right. Listen, a lot of things, when you start it and you start it big and you bold and you move forward, we're realistic and saying not everything will be perfect. We're making sure it's right. The key to me is, number one, we need to keep the public safe. There's concern, legitimate concern among people, including that the former governor had, I think, a legitimate, heartfelt concern that we need to keep the public safe as we do this. I've emphasized very clearly that I think local jurisdictions need to retain some semblance of land use and zoning control to determine whether they want these stores in their neighborhood. But we also have to make sure that we're turning illicit dealers into legal, regulated, quality small businesses. And we're determined to see that through.
Well, you know, so the state had no other choice but to deny these licenses for some of these social equity applicants, right? And the thing is, though, that it ended up hurting the very applicants that the state was trying to help. And we have sound. We want to hear from one applicant, Jacqueline Lacey.
The commissioner and the appeals commission, they all said that they're sorry I'm going through this. And I was like, well, thank you. That's nice for your sympathy, but it doesn't fix what's wrong. Something's got to be done.
So can the state do anything to help folks like Jacqueline Lacey who were kind of caught up in this?
Absolutely. We're working with our marijuana commissioner to make sure Jacqueline Lacey and others similarly situated are treated right and get the opportunity to create the recreational marijuana business that is within the promise of the legislation.
Okay. We're going to turn now to our reporter's notebook segment. This time we're going to hear from WHYY Delaware politics reporter Sarah Mueller.
Hi, Governor. Like Pennsylvania and other states, Delaware passed a Clean Slate Act that requires law enforcement to automatically seal or expunge qualifying criminal records. But John Reynolds of the ACLU of Delaware says the State Bureau of Identification is dragging its feet.
Delaware, instead, has not followed the best practices established in Pennsylvania. Instead, had state police decide that they want to manually check every eligible record to confirm its eligibility, which is currently on track to take nearly 2 decades to clear just existing eligible cases.
Pennsylvania cleared over 34 million cases in its first year of implementation, while Delaware has processed fewer than 27,000 since August 2024. My question to you is, will you push Delaware law enforcement to automatically expunge the records as required by the 2021 law?
So we'd love for you to respond. Can you get Delaware State Police to be a yes on this auto expungement?
I appreciate the question from Sarah and you, Shirley. It's reprehensible that in 2021, we passed a law to automatically expunge records. And here we are in 2026 talking about how it still hasn't gotten done. I'm committed to getting it done. You're going to hear more about this. Today's April 30th. By the end of May, you will hear more on that front. I don't like it when government does not act efficiently, and we're going to get this right.
So we're going to turn now to a segment called Accountability Corner. And earlier this month, you made your nomination for Delaware's first Inspector General. Before we talk about your nominee, I want to note that you were very supportive of creating an IG for the state. What were the problems and concerns that made it clear to you that the state needed an Inspector General?
All you got to do is read Delaware Public Media or WHYY to see that there are legitimate concerns about transparency in state government, I think in local government as well. Since I signed up for this career when I was a sixth and seventh grade math teacher, I came into office and I couldn't believe how hard it was for members of the general public to get basic information about how the county was spending their taxpayer money. We did something called open checkbook. There was no law requiring us to do it, just an order saying we're going to put everything online, so you can review just like you go online to see your checkbook, your credit card statement. You can see how your taxpayer dollar is being spent. I believe that to my core. It's not about politics for me. It's about delivering basic government for people. I'm not going to go ahead and speculate. I'm not the inspector general. I'm not going to go around and speculate about, you know, what we're going to find under this rock or that rock. My job was to, in partnership with a committee that the legislation set up that included the attorney general, cabinet secretaries, and member of the Senate and the House, to make sure we get someone really high quality. I think we've done that. One other quick thing. Done right, it's not just about uncovering wrongdoing and fraud. An inspector general will create efficiencies. We'll see things that government is doing that's inefficient, potentially an expungement legislation that was passed, automatic expungement that was passed in 2021, and say, hey, it's 2026. You're not following the law, and will actually help us to move our government forward in a way that benefits all Delawareans.
So with those things in mind, you tapped Robert Storch, who previously worked as an IG of federal agencies like the National Security Agency and the Department of Defense. Are these the type of things that you were important to you when you were vetting him and picking him? Were these the type of things that you were using as criteria to find this person to fill that role?
Yeah, I wanted someone who was experienced, who was unbiased, who wouldn't be afraid to take on a system, including, if need be, a governor, who was willing to look under every rock in the executive, legislative, judicial branch to find wrongdoing, to find, you know, fraud and waste, abuse, obviously, but also boldly will look to find inefficiency. Now, this is something I'm hesitant to say we got the perfect guy. I was with President George W. Bush a few months ago, and he said one key to life is low expectations. So I don't want to ruin it for Rob Storch, but this guy, he's teaching how to eradicate fraud and abuse from government at Columbia Law School. This guy, we got someone who's a national leader on this, who's been a practitioner for decades. So I'm excited. I think it's going to create opportunities for
him. And from what you said earlier, it sounds like you're prepared for him to walk into your office and ask questions.
I want to do right. We're an open book. We want to do right by people. We live in a situation right now where, certainly at the federal level, I feel like as a U.S. citizen, so much is being hidden from us. It's hard to know what's really going on. I think I owe it to Delawareans. It's a critical part of my service to Delawareans that, hey, I'm here for you. And if there's a way we can do it better, come take a look and let's work together on that.
Okay, we got about a minute, Governor, but I want to bring in a listener question. John from Fenwick Island wants to know, what's the difference between the state auditor's job duties and that of the inspector general's?
That's a great question. The inspector general is not an auditor. An auditor, after the fact, reviews books and records. It's an audit to go through accounts. The state auditor, who's elected, and I believe Lydia York is an auditor by training. They actually traditionally, and they hire an outside auditor to come in and look at accounts and make sure they were spent consistent with the law. I think the inspector general is going to look more broadly at wrongdoing and potential efficiencies.
Okay. One more comment. Cassie from Lincoln wants to know about the Office of Suicide Prevention. You signed this into law last year. What's the status?
Yeah. Hold on. Just one more thing on inspector general. Mm-hmm. I think because it's a new office, I think it's going to take some time to figure out how those different offices, the state auditor, which is in our constitution, the Office of Public Trust within our attorney general's office, and the inspector general, how they work in concert to make sure it benefits Delawareans. So I'm not saying we have an answer right now, but I think as time goes on, we're going to see that. Cassie's concerned about the Office of Suicide Prevention. The Office of Suicide Prevention is running. There is someone on my staff that's taken on that responsibility. I believe the leading cause, the leading crime associated, the leading incidence of gun violence is suicide. It's absolutely critical that we address it, that we address its root causes. I know there are people across our community whose lives have been deeply impacted by suicide, and we owe it to them to make sure that we ultimately grow our Office of Suicide Prevention, get out into communities, do everything we can to address the mental health and other root causes of suicide.
Okay, we're going to pause there for now. In just a moment, we'll be back with Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, including his reaction to community concerns we heard on a reporting trip we took this week to Wilmington. This is Ask Governor Meyer. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min.
And I'm Tom Byrne. Joining us this hour live is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer, and it is not too late to join the conversation.
Email askgovmeyer at whyy.org or call us at 888-477-9499. And if you're watching our live stream on YouTube or Facebook, leave your comments in the chat. So we're going to start, Governor, by debuting a new segment that we are calling Community Focus. Each month, one of our reporters will visit a different town or city in Delaware to get a sense of what people there want government to prioritize. So WHYY's Johnny Perez Gonzalez kicks us off.
Hey, Governor Matt Meyer. I'm Johnny Perez Gonzalez, one of WHYY's Delaware reporters. For this month's Community Focus, I took the streets of Wilmington, asking residents and visitors a simple question. What's the most critical issue facing you right now? Commuting from Baird to Wilmington University multiple times a week, 18-year-old college student Carl Subchinski says an issue hitting close to home is infrastructure.
The potholes are really bad. It's like I gotta swerve all around the road trying to dodge them, and it costs me money too because I have to replace the rims, my tires cracked, new tires, all that. So I think that's a pretty big issue that our governor could probably handle and fix.
Standing outside the Wilmington Public Library, 60-year-old Leon Dorsey shared concerns about public safety.
The cops are trying to force it, but they're not doing what they're supposed to do. I prefer they bring in the state boys because it's too much of the shooting and stuff. It needs to stop.
And next, we heard from Corinne Salvamini, a lifelong Wilmington resident who raised concerns about immigration enforcement and what it means for workers in Delaware.
I am concerned about the reports of the state giving employment records to ICE. I think that's really problematic. Part of labor history in Delaware, we've always been very pro-worker, pro-labor, and to put these workers at risk, I think, is not fair or part of what the American dream is about.
From the city of Wilmington, I'm Johnny Perez Gonzalez with this month's Ask Governor Meyer Community Focus.
So, Governor, we're going to take these one at a time. One, can you tell us how your administration is handling aging infrastructure in Delaware, what you can do so that Carl doesn't have to replace his rims so often?
Absolutely. We are determined to make investments in infrastructure. It's a little bit harder because the Trump administration came in and immediately discontinued all Biden era funding. I didn't do that with my predecessor, Carney. I think he had a lot of great programs, and I made sure we continued them to invest in infrastructure. I think almost any major potholes that someone like Carl is facing, we're addressing. The question is the time in which we're awesome. It might be in the queue to be fixed 5 or 6 years from now. So If you have an urgent road situation, if you're not getting responsiveness from DelDOT about it, please don't hesitate to contact me directly. And Carl, I'd be happy to hear from you if he happens to be listening at matthew.meyer@delaware.gov. Let me know. I'll make sure that things are appropriately prioritized, and we'll do anything we can to get additional resources to make sure infrastructure
maybe bump
is fixed.
His pothole up to the top of the list. All right. Well, what do you say to Leon about what your administration is doing to improve public safety?
Listen, it was a nice little shout out at the end when he said, we should bring state police in. State police is under my purview. They do an extraordinary job. The job of policing today, I believe, is harder than it's ever been. There are heroes out there doing everything they can. That doesn't mean that police officers are perfect, but it means that many police agencies across their state are working with communities. Again, if there's a specific issue that Leon has in his neighborhood, we would be happy to address it. The statistics show, and I know this doesn't mean anything to some people, but according to data, things are safer in terms of violent crime in Delaware than they've been in a generation.
Okay, finally, we want to kind of keep these brief because we have a lot to get to still. What do you say to Corinne, who's worried about Delaware turning over the employment records of over a dozen local businesses to ICE?
I'm with you, Corinne. That request came in the first weeks of February. I was the one person who stood up when we met internally and I said, we cannot turn these records over. It's unprecedented for the federal government to go snooping in unemployment insurance records of any state. We won't tolerate it. A federal judge has ordered us to turn them over. That's a wrong decision. We've appealed it and we'll continue to appeal to make sure that people's, that workers' rights, that small businesses' information is protected.
Well, the judge in the case has said that the argument is political, not legal. You disagree.
Well, the appellate court will decide that.
Okay, we're going to move on. Something many of our listeners have written in about in recent months, concerns around election security and voting. You recently created an advisory task force to look for possible, quote, vulnerabilities and emerging risks in elections. Do you have some specific areas that worry you?
There are a few things more important to the fabric of America at 250 years than one person, one vote. Anyone qualified to vote in America should have that right to vote. That's the first thing. The second thing is, throughout our country's history, it is state governments that have run electoral systems. That's vitally important. You want whoever's running the election system to be close to the people, to address the issues that the people are seeing in their community. Right now, there is an unprecedented attempt by our federal government to usurp, to take over state voting powers. What we've seen in Supreme Court decision, in a Supreme Court decision, Louisiana versus Calais, just this week. There's also an attempt from our federal government to tip the playing field. So the rules are changed to benefit certain groups over others. What we're trying to do in Delaware is protect Delawareans from this chaos, protect the core American values that I think run through the fabric of our state, and make sure that, hey, the elections this year are free, they're fair, that no one feels like they're in any danger to go and vote. And I just want to make sure we're prepared. It's not a Democratic effort or Republican effort. It's not even just a state effort. We've invited, in addition to our state elections commissioner, we've invited in the federal government to partner with us to make sure everybody has this equal right to vote.
Part of the equation is obviously money. And at the Department of Elections budget hearing in January, the elections commissioner noted that the federal government usually sends Delaware about $1 million for election security, this year only receiving $250,000. That's a pretty big shortfall. Briefly, was there any thought about backfilling that money somehow?
We'll make sure that elections are safe for Delawareans, and we will fund our election commissioner's office appropriately to make sure that that's the case.
Tom, I want to bring in a caller, yeah, but I want you to get your question first.
Sure. I want to bring in a listener submission on the same topic of elections. It's Jim from Milton, who wrote in about unaffiliated and independent voters. He argues that all Delawareans should be given a vote in primary elections, not just registered Democrats and Republicans. There is a bill with bipartisan support that cleared a House committee seeking to address this. If it landed on your desk, would you have any reservations about giving those over 200,000 unaffiliated voters a say in primaries?
Yeah, you know, I'm watching the legislative process. I, to be frank, I have not. There are hundreds of bills. I have not read every single bill. I think it's strange for people to use the word disenfranchisement when, if you want to vote in a primary, you can just register as a voter of that party and vote in that primary. I think it's generally important that Democrats have a right to select who they want to be their candidate without people voting or choosing who are not Democrats. And I think it's important Republicans do as well. One quick story. I went to law school in Michigan. When I was in law school in Michigan in 2000, there was a primary for president. It was an open primary. Many Democrats were going to vote in the Republican primary for John McCain because they thought he would be a lesser candidate again, when he ran, rather than George Bush. And I believe McCain won that Michigan primary, ultimately did not win the nomination. George Bush did. But I think it's just a point to say we don't want people gaming the system. Okay. If you want to be a Democrat and choose your Democratic nominee, then you can easily change your registration Democrat if you want to be a Republican.
Any concern? Because a lot of people say in this state, sometimes the primary is the general election. I think that's where some of this comes from.
I don't believe that's true. I think in any election, and there have been Republicans as recently as Ken Simpler in, I think, 2018 in 2018, who served in statewide office. There are plenty of examples in state legislature and districts where Democratic registrants far outnumber Republican registrants, where they're represented by a Republican. So I don't believe it's determinative. I think that in many cases, voters go in and they look based on the candidate. And if that's the case, then, you know, if the Republicans are losing statewide elections, they can make a stronger party and make sure they have stronger candidates and recruit more people to their party, better ideas and recruit more people. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact the Republican Party right now on the national level is doing things that's downright un-American, and it's inflating costs for Delawareans, and they're trying to find some way to have a greater say than they should have when Republicans are inflicting that those policies on Delawareans and on Americans.
Governor, we still want to get to education funding, but we have a caller on the line, Tom from Sussex County. Tom, thank you so much for your patience. What's your question for the governor?
Oh, well, hello, Mr. Governor. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I just had a question about the offshore wind project that was started by the previous administration, obviously, the previous state administration. And it was ongoing, mainly offshore in Sussex County. And there was actually a vote that was brought up last year by Sussex County residents involving power lines running through the Indian River Bay. And the county voted against moving forward the project. And the state decided, yeah, we're going to ignore that and just do it anyway. And it was actually the Trump administration, which we're not going to argue about them, trust me, but shot it down. And then I believe I heard recently that the state decided, yeah, we're going to keep going anyway and just find a new contractor. Why would you want to go against the residents of Sussex County who are impacted by this? And Sussex County is a heavy tourist destination for the beaches. If the wind project is so important, just put it in Newcastle or Kent County. I'm sure there's a wind penalty for being in the Delaware Bay, but they're the people who want it. Why not just try to put it there?
We have an energy crisis in America. And we have an energy crisis in Delaware. Delaware families across our state are seeing it in their monthly bills. There are a number of reasons for this energy crisis, but no reason is larger than the fact that Delaware does not generate much electricity. I've been very clear that we need to invest to make sure we have wind generation, solar generation, nuclear generation, combined cycle gas generation. That is a state policy, state energy policy, in collaboration with the federal government. The counties and sometimes towns, their role in energy is zoning and land use permitting. The zoning board in Sussex County voted unanimously, 5-0, Democrats and Republicans, for this wind project. The opposition in Sussex County Council was not based on their land use jurisdiction. It was based on opposition to wind. We cannot have an America that's successful if we have everybody on one side saying they only want wind and solar, and everybody on the other side saying they only want fossil fuel-based power. We need to go all in. We need to truly address what the president quite honestly calls an energy-dominant strategy. I think an energy-dominant strategy for Delaware must include a 1.7 gigawatt offshore wind project that, quite frankly, is more ready to go than any project of that size in our state.
Governor, we have some limited time left, but I do want to get to education funding, because this week the Public Education Funding Commission formally voted to recommend going ahead with a new hybrid model for state education funding. We've discussed this previously with you. We also learned this week, though, that the commission expects implementation to initially cost $150 to $200 million. How does that work in terms of absorbing that cost and making sure that the state has the money to make this work properly from the get-go?
Look, the bottom line is we need to educate our kids, and we need to fund the education of our kids equitably. It's really important with additional funding that we in the state and the public gets additional accountability. There's a loss of faith right now in some communities across our state that when we add dollars into our education system, we're not getting the return on performance that we deserve. What I mean by that is if we're paying more per student for your child's education, you should see that in the performance of your student in school, in the reading at third grade, the level which students read, the proficiency level, the level which students do math. The bottom line, so here's the sort of punchline. And as a teacher, dollars matter. They're really important, but dollars aren't ultimately going to determine whether we're successful or not. They're a prerequisite. We need to get that right, but we got to make sure we're using those dollars right. We're getting those dollars into the classrooms that need them most.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Want to just mention that the governor is wearing an orange tie and orange sneakers for the Flyers. So let's go Flyers.
Go Flyers.
Ask Governor Myers, produced by Hazel May Bryan, with help from Paige Murray-Bessler. Tina Calique and Diana Martinez are our technical engineers. Thank you to WHYY's Sarah Mueller and Johnny Perez-Gonzalez, and to Delaware Public Media's Ben Taboutier and Thomas Terry. Kevin McCory is our executive producer. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager.
And we thank you, Governor Meyer, for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. Go Sixers.
I'm Tom Byrne from Delaware Public Media.
And I'm Shirley Vann. Thank you so much for joining us.